All right. Thank you for the opportunity again to think with you, talk with you about the Bible. We've been thinking about kingdom living, and the idea is that Jesus, in using these parables, what he's been trying to do is help us see how God wants us to live in the kingdom. He wants us to be persistent in prayer because we know and understand that he will provide for us. He wants us also to be repentant about our sin because he will rejoice to receive us home again. I want us to take a look at the shrewd steward. This is in Luke chapter 16. This is actually one of my favorite parables. They're all kind of my favorite at the time, but this is one of my favorite parables. And one of the reasons is because people sometimes struggle with this particular one. So I want to take a look at it with you this morning. Luke chapter 16, verse number 1 beginning. The Bible says, "And he, Jesus, also says to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he was wasting his goods. And he called him and said to him, what is this that I hear of you? Render the account of your stewardship, for you can be no longer steward. And the steward says within himself, what shall I do, seeing that my Lord takes away the stewardship from me? I have not strength to dig, to beg, I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, that they may receive me into their houses. And calling to him each one of the Lord's debtors, he says to the first, how much do you owe to my Lord? And he says, 100 measures of oil. And he says to him, take your bond and sit down quickly and write 50. Then says he to the other, how much do you owe? And he says, 100 measures of wheat. And he says to him, take your bond and write 80. And his Lord commended the unrighteous steward because he had done wisely. For the sons of this world are for their own generation wiser than the sons of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends by means of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when it shall fail, they may receive you into the eternal tabernacles. He that is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much, and he that is unrighteous in a very little is unrighteous also in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon, or money, material things." And the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things and they scoffed at him. The parable of the shrewd steward. We're introduced to this steward. Jesus tells us there was this steward. First, notice his position, a steward. This is a person who is entrusted with the care of another person's goods, another person's materials for the other person's benefit. It's a position of trust. Sometimes in certain cultures, people will have stewards over their children. And so they will have a person whose job, whose responsibility it is to care for, to teach, even to raise the child for the parent's benefit. Sometimes you'll have a circumstance where a child, say a parent dies and the child is still small, and so that everything is left to the child, but the child is too young, too inexperienced to take care of these things for themselves. And so a steward will be put into place, and the steward's job is to take care of the young person's goods for the young person's benefit. Now notice, the goods do not belong to the steward. The steward is not supposed to be looking after his or her own interests. The steward is compensated for the service they provide, but their duty, their responsibility, is to look out for the owner's benefit. Paul would say, first of all, it's required that a steward be faithful. This is a position of great trust, a position of responsibility. And this man, listen, he's got a good master. He's got a good person to serve. And so he gets to benefit from all the blessings that inure to this person because of their material goods. You know, if he owns property and I'm supposed to take care of it, I get to live on the property and take care of it. It's his property, but I benefit from that. If he's got land, if he's got resources, if he's got servants, I get to live on that land and enjoy those resources and lead and guide those servants. It's his stuff, but I get to benefit from it. It's a position of trust. It's a good position that he's in. But he has a problem. Now, the master has heard that the steward has not been faithful. I mean, the first requirement of stewardship is that you be faithful, that you be honest, that you be upright, that you be trustworthy, that you execute your duties properly. And the master has heard that this man has not been. So the master says, you give an account of your stewardship. This is called a reckoning. See, whenever there's a stewardship, there's always going to be an accounting. There must always be a reckoning because the stuff is not your stuff. And at some point, I need you to sit down and go through the books with me so I can see how you have been handling my stuff. And if I'm dissatisfied with the accounting, you know what I'll do? I'll get rid of you and get another steward, somebody I can trust. Well, this joker's got a problem. Master's told him, you can't be my steward anymore. Yeah, that house you live in, that's my house. You don't appreciate it, I'll put somebody else in there. That stuff that you're dealing with, that's all my stuff. I don't like the way you've been treating it. I'll put somebody else in there who'll do a better job. Here's the deal. Part of his problem is that he's got poor prospects. You know, listen, I respect a person who knows him or herself. This guy knows himself. Now listen, I'm not really willing to get out there and bend my back and work hard. I mean, if he's going to put me out of here, I've got to provide for myself, and I'm not the kind of guy you're going to see on the side of the road digging. They'll pay you for that, but I'm not willing to do that kind of work. You ever seen somebody who said they needed a job, and they said, well, here's a job right here, and they say, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, you must not need a job then. He says, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to do real physical labor. That's just not me. He knows that about himself. Then he says, you know, but I'm also too proud to beg. He knows himself pretty well. So here's the deal. You don't want to be faithful in the job you have. You're not willing to bend your back and work hard. And then you say you're too proud to beg. Well, then how are you going to eat, sir? I know what I'll do. He goes to people who owe his master goods. Look at what he does here. And he starts cutting these deals. He says, I am resolved in verse number 4 what to do. I've got a plan. I am going to, when I get put out of my stewardship, deal with things in such a way that other people will receive me into their houses. So he calls the first one in verse number 5 and says, how much do you owe? Question, shouldn't he know how much this guy owes? That's his job. That is the job. But he doesn't seem to know. He asks, well, how much do you owe my Lord? And the man says, I owe 100 measures of oil. I tell you what you do. You sit down and you pay 50. You write that you'll give me 50 cents on the dollar, and that'll satisfy your debt. Question, who is that benefiting? He owes your Lord 100. Why are you going to cut him loose for 50? He's not worried about his Lord. He's worried about pleasing this guy who owes the 100 because he knows he's going to be fired. So in the meantime, he's going to use the influence that he has. He only has it for a short while. He's going to use that to set himself up for where to go next. The next person, he says to the other in verse number 7, how much do you owe? Shouldn't you know how much he owes? He says 100 measures of wheat. I tell you what, you take your bond and you write 80. You write 80. We'll settle this debt for 80 cents on the dollar. Who is that benefiting? Not his Lord. He's sort of doing something that will benefit the one who owes to set himself up so that when he leaves, he has some grace in the sight of others. And so he does that. Now, here's the thing that sometimes throws people. In verse number 8, the man's Lord praises him. He commends the, listen to what Jesus says, unrighteous steward because he has done wisely. Some people look at that and they say, well, wait, I just can't figure this out. Why is Jesus commending this guy? Why is he praising this guy? He says the man is unrighteous. He says the man is unjust. He's not saying that what the man has done is savory. He's not saying that what the man has done is scrupulous. But what he is saying is the man is wise. In what way has he been wise? Now listen, he go to prison for it. In what way has he been wise? He's been dishonest. In what way has he been wise? He's been lazy. In what way has he been wise? He's recognized a reality. He can't stay where he is. Once he recognizes that his current situation is temporary, there is an expiration date on it, his complete focus was, where am I going next? And he did what he could to prepare himself for what was next. Jesus explains this. He says, the sons of this world, unsavory people, ungodly people, are for their own generation wiser than the sons of light. He heaps this man into the category of the ungodly. But he says, you need to look at how ungodly people operate sometimes and learn something, because sometimes they have more wisdom about certain things than the children of light. I say to you, now this is really clear. I say to you, what are you supposed to learn? You look at the parable and you see this earthly thing, this earthly steward, and how he's been unrighteous, how he prepares himself, though, for his next stop. And then he says, now you need to look at that and learn this lesson. Make to yourselves friends by means of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when it fail, they may receive you into the eternal tabernacles. Your stuff, you're not going to be able to keep that forever. Are you tied to your stuff? Listen, I've got this great house. You worship the house you live in. I've got this car. I've got a 2019 so-and-so. You're going to take that with you when you leave? So many clothes in the closet. Listen, how many of them can you wear at a time? You need to use what you have to make friends for your next stop. He says you need to be concerned about eternal tabernacles. That's the sense in which this unrighteous man had been wise. He was concerned about his next stop. Not where he was, but where he was going. And Jesus says this is what his people need to do. Now, I want to make a few observations with you about this. This shrewd steward, he's shrewd over worldly wealth. And Jesus is saying to us that we need to be shrewd over worldly wealth. It's not that we're concerned about the next job we're going to get, but we are concerned about the next home that we will occupy, our eternal dwelling places. And so in verse number 9, Jesus says that we should leverage our worldly wealth. That was his point. You need to use the money that you have on earth to make friends in heaven. Did you know that it's possible to utilize the material things that you have in this life to ingratiate yourself with God for a home in the next life? Did you know that? I just think sometimes maybe we look at our material blessings a certain kind of way. It's sort of my money, and I'll do with my money whatever I want. And so I can build bigger barns with my stuff. And if I need 4 cars, 5 cars, if I need a new car every 2 years, I mean, it's my money, right? Well, I suppose it has been entrusted to you, but it's not yours, really. You're just the steward over it. You've been entrusted with it for a limited period of time. And at a certain point, you're going to have to give an account. There will be a day of reckoning for how you've utilized it. We don't own anything. I know the law of the land may ascribe ownership for us, but we don't own anything. The cattle on a thousand hills, it all belongs to God. He simply entrusts us with it. And he actually expects us to use it for his benefit. Is that making sense to you? I mean, listen, God is going to allow you to enjoy it. He's going to allow you to use it. Listen, he's going to let you live in his house. He's going to let you drive his car. Those are his clothes that you put on your back. That's his food that you eat when you sit at his table. He's going to let you use it. But he expects you to remember that it's not yours, but his. And a faithful steward always considers what's in my Lord's best interest as I use his resources. You have to keep that in mind. Jesus says, listen, you need to leverage what you have. In verse number 9, that's the point. Leverage what you have so that when these dwellings fail, you have somebody who will receive you into the heavenly tabernacles. This is limited. It's going to fail. It's not going to last forever. So what's next? Listen, the second thing that he points out here, beginning at verse number 10, is we need to make sure that we demonstrate trustworthiness. Trustworthiness. In verse 10, he that is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much, and he that is unrighteous in a very little is unrighteous also in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, worldly goods, material blessings and so forth, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you've not been faithful in that which is another's, wait a minute, what's another's? He's talking about your stuff. If you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give to you that which is your own? Listen, if we demonstrate faithfulness to God in how we handle money and material blessings, there is more that it could inure to our benefit. There are greater things than what we enjoy on the earth in this life. We may think that having so much money or so much stuff like this is the greatest, but it's not at all. It's worldly goods, stuff that will perish, and it's not ours anyway. But if we show ourselves faithful, if we show that God can trust us, if we show that he can depend on us to use these things in a way that benefits his cause first, then he will actually give us true riches. Sometimes in the church, sometimes we'll look at folks in the world and think to ourselves, you know, boy, I just wish I had all the stuff that that person has. When the truth is, you are far richer than anyone in the world who's outside of Christ. Yeah, I don't know how much money some of these jokers have, but I don't care. They're not using it the way they should. See, that's what I'm concerned about. Somebody says, well, listen, how come God didn't give me all of that? Because you can't handle it? That's why. I mean, you're struggling with what he did give you, right? You want more and can't handle the little bit that you have. He says, show yourself faithful over a little. Handle the little right. If you're not liberal with the little that you have, you won't be liberal in much. I would give more if I had more. Well, listen, you're just not really giving out of what you do have. You think God doesn't know that? You put God second, third, fourth, last now with the little that you do have. Put him first with the little that you do have, then he'll bless you with more. You know, in Matthew 25, you got the parable of the talents, you know, and the man goes away and he gives one guy five talents and one two and one. I always tell people, you know, the guy who had the two talents, he had his hands full. You know, that guy didn't have time to sit around. Why didn't he give me five talents? If he'd have gave me five talents, now you'd have done the same thing you did with the two. He gave you what you could handle. The Bible says that the master gave to each one according to his several or individual ability. The guy who had the one talent, if he'd have given him 100, he'd have gone and buried him in the earth. We should use what we have to benefit and bless God's agenda first. That's shrewd. That's wise. That's intelligent. That's how we make sure that when these things run out, when this life is over, we have someone who's going to receive us into the heavenly tabernacles. In verse number 13, he makes this clear for us. No man can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You know what's interesting to me about this? Jesus couldn't have been any more clear about this if he wanted to. You cannot do it. And some people sit there and think, yes, I can. I can figure out a way. I can do it. I can do it. God knows I love him, but I've got these other things I got to do, and he's going to understand. I don't know if he's going to understand. By the time we get through with everything that God's going to understand, listen, we have rearranged the priorities that he has given us. You cannot serve two gods. You never could. You remember in the Old Testament, in Exodus 20, where Moses is receiving the Ten Commandments, God tells them, number one, you shall have no other gods before me, beside me. You will have no other gods. And then he tells them, you won't bow down to any graven image. But listen, God's not going to compromise. He's not going to share your attention. He's not going to ever be second to anyone. You cannot serve God and money. God has to be. He has to be first. So when it comes to material things in particular, we have to be careful that we don't try to do the very thing Jesus said is impossible to do. Christians are supposed to be spiritually minded people, but sometimes Christians can be distracted by worldly goods and worldly pleasures, just like everybody else. You know, it's interesting. Somebody hit my truck. I drive a truck on a daily basis. I drive a truck. Somebody hit my truck. My kids and I had gone to the gym. They wanted to play basketball. I was working out. And cars out there in the parking lot. Somebody hit it. Lady hit it and drove away. Actually, I didn't see her hit it. She hit it and went home. But somebody at the YMCA saw her and knew her and reported it and so forth. So we got it straightened out. So I take my truck in to get repaired. This is just this week. I take it in to get repaired. And, they rent another truck for me. Since you tow mine up, you rent me another truck. And they give me a 2019 Platinum F-150. I'm going to just tell you, I didn't mind driving it. I drive a 2005 Dodge Ram. You know, with manual windows. I'm fine to drive it, you understand? I never have a complaint about it. I start it up, it turns on. I hit the gas, it goes forward. You know, I'm fine. My kids saw it, and they were like, Dad, you need to get one of these. I said, well, listen, I like the truck, but they don't give these away. I look it up on the internet, and I show them, this is a $55,000 truck. Now, when you get older and you start working, listen, you want to know what to do for the old man? You know, Platinum F-150. Platinum F-150 with 4,000 miles on it. I'm not going to say no. But this helped. This allowed us to have a conversation. This is why your dad doesn't have one of these. See, this $55,000, if I have it, it's the Lord's money. And we got to have a conversation. We have to think to ourselves, what can we do to advance the Lord's cause with this money? Now, I don't have a problem with the idea that he will afford me an opportunity to have some transportation in this society. I don't have any problem with that. I don't think he needs me to spend $55,000 on it. See, because what can we do with $55,000? We start talking about it. What can we do with that kind of money? Well, we could buy a truck for a fraction of that. And then we have people who need to go to preaching school, right? We talk about and pray about Don Blackwell in that situation every day since this happened. I say, listen, you know that the Blackwell family is in some real need right now. They have done a lot of great work, blessed the church over many years, and now they need our help. So question, new truck or used truck? And support people who are wanting to go to school so they can learn how to preach the gospel. Support a person who has been injured and whose family is in some need right now. I have to ask myself, what should I do to ingratiate myself to the one who can receive me into eternal tabernacles? Because when I die, the Platinum F-150 can't go with me. Is that making sense to you? So I have conversations like this with people sometimes. Listen, I get it. You work hard. You make good money. That's no problem. I wouldn't begrudge you a nice place to live. But how big a house do you need? You can't take it with you, and your kids ain't going to do nothing but mess it up when you leave anyway. You know, how much jewelry do you need? How new a car do you have to have? How much stuff do you have to have? Because one day you will have to sit down with God and go through and give an account. And if you're consuming all of his stuff as if it was your stuff, man alive, he might tell you he needs another steward. He might not be pleased with that. Tell me if this is making sense. Am I making this up, or is this making sense? Jesus' point is, see, people in the world, unscrupulous people in the world, when they realize that their current circumstance is temporary and they will not have access to all the things they have access to now, they will be wise enough to say, I better use this finite window of opportunity and this access that I have to set myself up for the next place. Jesus is saying that guy was unrighteous. Okay, he was dishonest in the way he did that, but there is a point there that the children of light ought to pay attention to. The stuff that we have, we just have access to for a limited time. It's not going to last forever. And if we are wise, we will use what we have for this limited time to set ourselves up for the next place. Pharisees heard this, and the Bible says they were lovers of money, so they scoffed. They made light of what Jesus says. They dismissed it. Why do they do that? Because they love their stuff. We don't want to have the kind of spirit that the Pharisees had. Why? We want to be shrewd in our stewardship because God receives. You see, he will receive us into heavenly tabernacles. He'll give us a better place to live. He will give us true riches. So we have to be wise to show ourselves faithful over the little bit. And however much it is that we have in this life, it really is just a little bit. So we handle it in a way that's going to advance his cause and show ourselves faithful. I'm interested in your questions or your comments or your thoughts about this parable and the lesson that we're supposed to learn from it. Questions, comments, thoughts. And I'll tell you, that's a good point. If you didn't hear, she was saying she'll visit around and she'll pay attention to certain factors. And sometimes one of the factors she'll look at is sort of how the people are giving. And you can go to sometimes a smaller congregation and they seem to be giving in aggregate an amount that would be equivalent to what a larger congregation is giving. Let me just tell you, this is when I talk to people about giving, here's what I don't like to do. I don't like to get into sort of percentages, okay? Because the New Testament doesn't teach us in that way. We know in the Old Testament, you know, so well, you got to give a tithe, and a tithe is 10%. That's a starting place, right? I can't find anywhere in the Bible where God's people ever gave less than that, and I will always acknowledge that, but that's just, I mean, that's like a bare minimum. When you think about giving to God, here's where you start. What has He given to me? And how do I feel about Him in light of what He has given to me? And how can I express to Him how much I appreciate what He has done for me? That's where your giving comes from. See, because the tax man, he just tells me it's got to be a certain percentage. And then at a certain point, I just have to write the check and I'm paying a bill. It's not like that when you give to God. So what I encourage people to do is listen. You sit down and you look at where your money is going. The money that God has given to you, where is it going? And is it possible for you to look at where the money is going and say to yourself, you know what? If I will sacrifice this, I could give more to benefit God's agenda. And so I will sacrifice this so that I can ingratiate myself further. Show God that I am faithful. Show God that He can trust me. Show God that I will handle His stuff by pursuing His interest. So, you know, hey, what are you paying on cable? What is it, $100, $150? I don't know. I haven't had cable for a long, long time. What if I cut that off? $100, $150 a month? And gave that to support a student who's going to school, maybe has a family, and is trying to prepare himself to go out into the world and preach the gospel. Would that be a better use of the Lord's money? You don't have to answer, because you might have cable. But would that be a better use of the Lord's money? See, how much money are you spending on recreation? You know, I didn't say you're not supposed to have recreation. Don't put me in a box like that. How much money is that costing you? What if, instead of going to Starbucks every day, dropping $6, $7 on whatever they sell, they're all the frizzy stuff they sell, what if, instead of doing that, you know, say, well, I want good coffee. You want good coffee? Okay, you don't have to drink the cheap stuff. You want good coffee? What if you say, I'll take that money that I would spend at Starbucks over the course of a month, go buy myself a grinder, and find a good coffee and buy a big bag of that good coffee, imported from South America. It's going to be cheaper. Take that good coffee, go home, grind it fresh right there in my grinder, and then the 11 months of saving, I will give that to an orphan's home. You mean to tell me you can't do that? Your income doesn't have to go up for you to do that. It's just a question of how you look at what you have and what priority you give it. I have never owned a brand new car, not because I can't afford it. I just think it's not the best use of the money. You got a brand new car. I'm not jumping on you. I'm just telling you, I look at it and I say the purpose of the vehicle is to get me from this place to that place safely. And if I can do that for 20% of the cost and then use the savings to do what God wants done in some more immediate ways, I think that's a better use of His money. I'm not telling you what to do with the money God has given you. I'm telling you how you should be thinking about what you do with what God has given you. Tell me if that doesn't make sense. I always like people to stop me if I go too far. Y'all ain't saying nothing. Yes, ma'am. That's right. Financial literacy. Listen, this is just a matter of good stewardship. If you don't understand basic principles about handling money, you won't make the best use of the money God has given you. Now, we're not talking about running out playing the stock market and all of that. Jesus says to those people, gave you 5, 2, and 1. He says to the one who had the one talent, you buried it in the earth. You should have taken it to the exchangers, and then I would at least have had mine own with usury or interest. I mean, you got to know some basic things, and that's just a matter of good stewardship. All right. Questions, thoughts, concerns about any of that? Yeah, so sometimes there's situations. Listen, you know, you're trying to, what she said is that sometimes when she's out, people approach her and ask for things, and she may not feel comfortable, always feel safe. You have to use some wisdom, right? My kids, you know, they've been with me, and people will ask for money or ask for help, and sometimes we'll help them and sometimes we won't. And then you can, especially when they were smaller, you know, they'd be kind of like, well, why didn't we help this guy? They can't understand why one time yes, one time no. And I tell them, listen, there's a lot of factors that sort of you have to process very quickly in making decisions on the fly about who you're going to help. And like we pulled up into some place, I don't remember where we were, we pulled up in the parking lot, and a gentleman walks up as I was opening the door from behind me. I'm getting out of the car and starts asking me for stuff. You know, my immediate response to him was back up. I just kind of grew up in an environment, you just can't walk up behind me like that when I'm getting out of the car, because the first thing coming to my mind is not whether I should give you a couple of dollars. You know, they were like, well, why did you do this? Listen, he knew better than that. In that moment, my immediate thought was our safety and not giving him some money. And I understand there's a lot of factors we have to process, but here's what I tell people. Don't let the fact that there are some times where you're concerned about doing something put you in a position where there are no times that you do what you can. You see what I mean? We'll use the fact sometimes that I'm not comfortable in this setting not to do anything. Well, listen, well, what does that have to do with your giving money to support orphans? That has nothing to do with that. What does that have to do with the fact that there are some times where people in your immediate environment will have some needs and you need to move to help? Yeah, you won't be able to do everything every time, but you can do some things all the time. Does that make sense?